Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders. And Ty, this week we are talking about Wave 2 selections for the Under Armour All-America Game. The second sect of 11 boys picked for the game. It is an awesome event. We talked about 11 awesome players about 2 weeks ago, and here we are. We're back in the saddle again. Tell me what your thoughts are on this group as a kind of whole entity.
Yeah, it was fun. I think that looking at wave one briefly, just we took five defensemen. So we knew this wave would consist largely of offensive players, and you'll see there's a lot of attack midi types, a lot of versatility. Looking at all these kids, yeah, I mean, they're two-way guys, they're attack midi, they ride their tails off, they do it all. I really like a lot of these kids, and we'll break them down, but, feel good about several of them playing multiple positions in college.
Coming out, we will begin with the attackmen. Griffin Cook from Jamesville DeWitt High School heading to Syracuse. Nikki Solomon from Centennial out of Georgia heading to North Carolina. Among those who are listed as attackmen slash midfielders, Kyle Long from Springfield Delco heading to Maryland. Alex Simmons from Culver heading to Denver. Griffin Westland from Seton Hall Prep heading to Notre Dame. The pure midfielders as they're listed, Owen Caputo from Middle Creek in North Carolina heading to Duke. Jeff Connor from Strathaven heading to Virginia. Jack Simmons from McDonough heading to Virginia. And Evan Zinn heading to from Staples, Connecticut, heading to Johns Hopkins. And then rounding out the group, a pair of long stick midfielders who can play down low. Jose Boyer, originally from Yorktown, doing a PG year at Deerfield, heading to Notre Dame. And BJ Ferrer from McDonough, just like Simmons, heading to Penn. That's the 11. A lot of really talented players, and we'll start with the attackmen. Griffin Cook is a player who I got to admit I don't know as much about as a lot of the other folks on the selection committee. I do know that the Orange coaching staff is very high on him. What can you say about Cook's game?
Yeah, he's 5'7", so he's certainly undersized, but just brings this toughness and burst, just overall energy to the table, and I love what he can do. I don't think it's a perfect comparison, and I have not seen him a ton, but I like to kind of compare him a little bit. He has some shades of Kevin Rice.
I was gonna say that's the obvious,
it's an easy comparison, knowing that they're upstate kids at Syracuse. He just kind of has this bounce to his game that I love, and this confidence, and just kind of like a fearless Dodger. So I love Griffin. I think that what I'm anxious to see, and this is the case with a lot of different Syracuse kids, is how will he fit in? We know that Syracuse does things differently from a recruiting standpoint, where they have a lot of transfers, a lot of JUCO kids, certainly some red shirts, but I think that he's a kid that will come in and see time. So I'm pumped to have Griffin in the game. Awesome kid and just a great Dodger. He's about 5'7", 160. So one of the smaller kids, but, he had something like 86 and 35 last year, and that's just insane no matter where you're playing. So feel good about a kid going to Syracuse, especially someone from arguably the best program in Section 3 in Syracuse.
And on the other end of the familiarities perspective, from my perspective, is Nikki Solomon from Centennial, chasing some amazing career scoring marks from an athletic profile standpoint, rounded out as having a great senior high school football season as a kicker and I believe a punter as well. So for whatever that's worth, because it's a different skill set, but it's an interesting little wrinkle to, like I said, an athletic profile player that I've seen for 4 years now, who is just the definition of quick and slick, and he's put on a lot of weight. He's got a bigger frame than he originally did. I think that strength is the type that allows a player who's very good at operating behind the goal, getting topside, keeping his head up, being a threat to score and a threat to feed. And I think that his game revolves around that quick first step and that ability to get past his defenseman when he gets to GLE.
Yeah, I love him. I love his game. I think that he's like, he goes really hard. And I think that, like, if, again, going back to Cook, Solomon has put up ridiculous numbers. He's athletic. He's tough. And just has the overall IQ that you look for. You know, I love what Carolina brings in next year from a tax standpoint. They have three outstanding players. Jacob Kelly was a first wave kid from Calvert Hall, and then also Brian Cameron. So, you know, he's someone who I feel good about, and not that they're totally the same player, but if you look at his brother, Nate has had a really good career so far. He's had a really solid couple of years. And, of course, we come off of a week in which he had arguably the best goal of the weekend with the fake jump shot and number of fakes in general. You know, I think Nicky can provide some of that. And, you know, I think, again, the toughness, if he can bring that and the consistency to Chapel Hill, rather, I feel good about him having a great career. So I love Nicky's game, another great family. Another great kid, and the rumor is that he may try and walk on as a kicker for the Tar Heels.
Moving along, we talked about Alex Simmons a couple weeks ago when Culver made their East Coast swing and got an opportunity to get eyes on him. You know, in that description, I talked about his suddenness and his ability to operate on the wing, get to the middle of the field by getting topside or get underneath his defenseman and create havoc. It was a skill set that is reminiscent of Ethan Walker, and I, you know, hesitate to make that comparison now that we have made three comparisons so far in this podcast. But I do think it helps people visualize what his game might end up growing into. The thing about Simmons' inclusion in the Under Armour game that's so exciting is I have a feeling this guy's going to produce some highlight reel goals.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he already has, and he's one of the main reasons why I just love watching Culver. And there's a reason I'm heading out to Michigan this weekend is to see Hill and Culver, a plethora of Canadians, and Simmons is at the top of that list. He's just, again, one of those steady presences. He does it all. I think that he's played a lot of attack. I think I see him at midfield. I'm not totally sure. I know the Culver staff, you know, feels that he'll play midfield for the Pios. But he can dodge from just about wherever. And, like, he may not be super athletic, but just has that general knack for scoring that you love to see. So I'm pumped to watch him. I know that, like you said, Ethan Walker has put up some highlight reel goals, and yeah, I have no doubt that Simmons will as well. You know, love calling that kid and telling him he was Under Armour All-American. He kind of said, you know, this is the best call ever. You know, this is an awesome feeling. Thank you so much. Just a really humble, bright kid that will have a hell of a career, in my opinion.
Kyle Long is an interesting player coming out of Springfield Delco because, to the point about versatility, I saw him run as kind of a quarterback for the Philadelphia team in the Under Armour underclass event last summer. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, he was playing in the Committed Academy for the Legends team. And he was just your prototypical utility midfielder, kind of a do-it-all guy. And I was like, wow, this doesn't even feel like the same player. I was super impressed by him. But when you combine that with the success that he had at high school or has had as a high school player on the field, you got to be excited about what he means for this Maryland group coming out of the class of 2018.
Yeah, no, he really has some of the best vision I've ever seen. I mean, for a kid that can run both, play some midfield, play some attack, he just has this field sense that is second to none. And I know that the Terps love him, and I think that he'll be another player that will get a shot right away, even though it's a Maryland team. It has some depth, has some young options, and takes some transfers. But, yeah, I love this kid. He's athletic. He can break a guy down. He played basketball, you know, strong football player. I think he was a receiver in DB, I believe. Plays a lot of lacrosse despite that. And I think, like, just a really strong ceiling, knowing that he can break defenses down. He can make pinpoint passes and is consistent. He's a winner. I mean, Springfield's won some championships, and he's just a super competitive kid that I really like watching. Both with Springfield and the Dukes and the Philly team and at Committed Academy, he's always impressed.
Talking about the notion of a competitive player, Griffin Westland, Seton Hall prep. It was interesting. I remember I went to a Yale practice in the fall, and I was talking to Brian Tevlin about Griffin, a former high school teammate of his, and his comment was just one of those kill him with kindness types. He goes, "This kid, for the entirety of the time I've played lacrosse with him, like, I don't understand how he scores, but he just scores all the time." And he has like a creativity and a craftiness to his game that he just figures out a way to make it work. But certainly a fiery personality that brings a lot to the table in that regard as well.
Yeah, he's another guy I feel like I've watched a million times because he plays a lot of lacrosse with Leading Edge or, you know, be it Under Armour, where I thought his skills were on display. Going back to the fake jump shot, Westland loves the fake jump shot, perhaps too much so, but just plays with this swagger, this confidence about him. And I think Tevlin kind of nailed Westland in the sense that, like, he's not like a lights out athlete, but he still has like this agility, this COD, and just knows how to break down his man, knows how to beat his man. And also plays both attack and midfield. I think he projects probably at midfield. Played some attack, a lot of attack in the summer. A great shooter. And he gained some range. And, you know, I really enjoy watching him dodge. Because whenever his team needs something out of him, he provides it. So, of course, you know, the big deal was that he made that switch from Hopkins to Notre Dame. A school that will have some other Jersey kids in that class. And, you know, I think it's a good fit for him, just the way that he plays.
And then, like I mentioned, there's another group of guys who represent a little bit more of traditional midfielders, maybe. And one for me that stands out is Evan Zinn, another player who we got eyes on at Committed Academy last summer. And for me, he's so tall and rangy, the way that he kind of runs and covers a lot of ground, the way a lot of tall players do. It feels like they're not even, like, you know, working that hard, and all of a sudden they're from one box to the other. He looks like he would be a prototypical alley dodging midfielder, but he showed the capacity to do a lot more. I liked his halfway dodge, which is what I call somebody who, you know, can either dodge down the alley or you dodge to the middle of the field. But the goal is not to get as deep into the defense as you can. It's to get to a certain point, pause, and be able to see over the defense, make a decision as to whether or not you're going to continue with your dodge, you're going to shoot, or you're going to feed. You know, Kevin Crowley was a guy for me that really solidified my understanding of how effective that type of move can be. I saw Zinn do that a few times against quality competition. And then additionally, I saw him, you know, cover. Be pretty difficult to get by, and I think you know, he's the type of player that has the capacity to make a lot of different types of contributions as a Blue Jay.
Yeah, I could talk about this kid for a long time. I think that he's a really important recruit, and Hopkins has two very important recruits among several, Zinn and Epstein. Because you look at Hopkins' graduation, they'll lose Shaq Stanwyck, Joel Tinney, Pat Frazier. They'll lose Guida. They'll lose several middies. And then, obviously, the quarterback, the offense, and Shaq, as I mentioned. I think Zinn steps in and will team up with a guy like Connor DeSimone or Alex Concannon and play a lot of minutes. I mean, I heard this comparison a couple times when talking to college coaches doing the rankings back in August and September. They feel that he is like a John Rannigan type, just a downhill, competitive dodger. I think that he's smoother. I thought there were, you know, parts of John Rannigan, he was my year, that, you know, were a little raw, you know, a little stiff. Had a great career, but I think Zinn just, like, uses his size and has this, like, deceptive speed about him, just goes really hard. I think if he can get in the weight room a little bit and bulk up a little bit and work in his offhand, I feel very confident in him being a key cog in that offense in the Big Ten going forward. I know he's a little banged up right now. Played probably as much lacrosse as any of my five stars. He was seemingly at every event, but always a smile on his face, always contributing and playing hard. Even though there may be some times where he can, I wouldn't say coast or take plays off, but again, I mean, the kid was at every single event, so that's all right. But I know that he'll be relied on going forward.
we talk about winners, and one guy who really jumps off the page is Owen Caputo, whose Middle Creek team went 22-0 last year. They're off to a 14-0 start this year. The son of Duke assistant coach Ron Caputo, he's just a all-around player. You know, the type. I want to hear your description, because I can't get past the cliches with him. You know what I mean?
Coach's son.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, yeah. That's like, that is. I mean, I've said a lot of the same things multiple times about him. I mean, he's everything you want in a coach's son. He is a tremendous athlete. He goes hard between the lines. I think that...
Hold on. Before we move on from that, the tremendous athlete thing is really interesting, because a lot of times people say coach's son to overcome the deficit athletically.
Yeah.
But when you think about lacrosse and the, you know, types of things that basically make up a lacrosse player, a lot of these guys that are coaches' sons, their dads played lacrosse at a really high level. So it makes sense that they would actually be really athletic for this sport, whereas maybe that isn't quite the case in football and basketball.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, like, sure, there are probably some better athletes, but I think if you pair his athleticism and his motor, that's, you know, like, that's Owen. Like, that he plays hard, and you know, as you'd expect from a coach's son, another cliche, those invisible plays. Yeah, I feel like we use that a whole lot in lacrosse, and just kind of sees plays before they happen, and he's complete. And I want to say he's played some attack, but, you know, even though Duke's a little bit light at attack in the next few classes, I think that he's a kid that will play some midfield, whether it's defensively or all midfield, rather, whether it's defensively or offensively or both ways. He's just kind of really good at everything, but some would maybe say not great at any one thing, just so solid.
And then last among the midfield group, we'll talk about them in tandem, because I think that there's, while their games might not necessarily mirror each other, because they both were flips or late commits to Lars Tiffany at Virginia, Jeff Connor out of Strathaven and Jack Simmons out of McDonough, like I said, can be talked about in tandem. How do you see them kind of contributing to the midfield core at Virginia into the future?
Yeah, I think, you know, those two, they it is fair to pair them together. I think that they weren't like that. They weren't the type of kids that were talked about a ton. I mean, one was going to St. Joe's, one was going to Georgetown, and just improved a ridiculous amount over time, which is what you want, and they have that work ethic. So with Connor, I think he's a player who really struck me at Under Armour, and he was someone I wanted to watch a whole lot of after talking to my man Matt Shandick. Shandick was just super high on this kid. He was putting up insane numbers. I mean, I think it was like 120, 130 points in the Central League, you know, which is no slouch, one of the best public school leagues in the country. So, you know, I love his game. I love how hard he plays. I love his motor and his shooting ability. And then Simmons is just, you know, I've told Deemer Class this, his offensive, you know, his coach at McDonough. He reminds me some of Deemer. I don't think he's that same level of athlete, but I think that they have a lot of similarities, like that quick release, that dodging ability. It's funny. You asked me a question about how I feel they'll fit in at UVA. I know that they'll get a lot of time early on. I think knowing that they'll also have Grayson Saladay and a few other pieces, it's tough to say. But I think that they're both going to play offense, and they're both going to be, you know, constant contributors.
It's interesting because, and we haven't talked as much about some of these guys, you know, perspective contributions at the next level, but in the context of Virginia's midfield core, you know, certainly it's an important part of the way that Virginia needs to play. And we've seen that, you know, Brown's 2016 team is the paradigm for how people envision
yeah.
Virginia playing going forward. And, you know, they need 6 to 8 guys because they want to play so many possessions, and they need guys that need to be able to play enough defense so that they can get on the field and be part of that early offense.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Brown had a couple of guys that were really good at long poles, that is, bringing the ball in Tullett and Kemp over the midline. But they were complemented by Brennan Caputo and those types of guys who were able to you know, put up 30, 40-point seasons, and they had five or six of them that were able to do it. You know, Virginia has been really reliant on one midfield line. And with Ryan Conrad's injury, they've been, I don't know what the right way to describe it is, but just a little bit more one-dimensional and a little bit more six-on-six oriented offensively. You know, and we've seen some nice performances, but they've more come from the attack than they have from the midfield. And I think that an infusion of depth is going to help Virginia take its next step.
Well, yeah, and that's what stands out to me about this class. I mean, I kind of tipped it around the question, or the answer rather, but I do think that this is depth, and I'm not trying to disrespect any one player, because I think that especially with adding Peyton Cormier, who was the earliest 2019 commit, who will now go in as an 18, between him and attack, along with Xander Dixon, and you have Harry Welford and Saladay and Simmons and Connor, you know, that's LaSala at faceoff midi. That's a lot of bodies and very able bodies. And I think that with Connor, I think he's right up there as a feeding midfielder. Even though I did say Kyle Long will play attack, he's a great feeder, has just great vision, and like doesn't really beat his man clean, but just gets by him in kind of an unconventional way. And Simmons, like, you know, I don't think Simmons is as much of a threat to you know, dodge to feed as Connor is, but he will be good for you know, some beautiful highlight reel goals, just staying in the corner and you know, love watching him play. I love Jeff Connor. I think they both developed really nicely.
And then, like I said, at the other end of the field, we've got a couple of guys who I think are primarily known as long stick midfielders, but can play down low. And Jose Boyer, the PG from Deerfield, who's going to Notre Dame, and BJ Ferrer from McDonough, two sport athlete, going to Penn. One of the things they share in common is I don't think either is 6 feet tall.
No,
and I think that that's
5'9", 5'10", probably.
And that's a hallmark in their game. Boyer is, you know, the type of guy who has borne some comparisons to, you know, some of the kind of Andrew Irving, you know, the I don't know what the right word is. I want to say like great Notre Dame long sticks, but more so just this is the type of player that they've had a few times in terms of just really active, almost hyperactive, kind of a tornado, able to make things happen, get the ball on the ground, get the ball off the ground, get the ball up the field, all those types of plays that you traditionally don't associate with Notre Dame, except for when you do. And when they're playing that way, they're playing a lot better because they're getting easier goals, etc. And then Ferrer is a guy who, you know, for me, I've been so impressed with him over the years in terms of his compete level, because he's gotten on the field since his, I believe he played a lot as a freshman at McDonough, and you know, that's not that's not a common thing. And certainly I remember explicitly it, as a sophomore, you know, how he was going toe to toe in MIAA semifinals and championship games. And I think that just goes so far in terms of showing someone's mettle and their ability to compete at the next level.
Yeah, and I could talk about BJ, you know, longer than I can talk about Jose, although I love Boyer. BJ, yeah, he's a competitor. He's an athlete. He does it all. I mean, I haven't seen him play a lot of LSN this year, but McDonough's very deep defensively. And, you know, just watching them the other day, you know, come from behind to beat BL in the last few minutes, BJ was just an animal. I mean, he must have had, I mean, maybe not half a dozen interceptions, but probably 3, 4, 5 interceptions and you know, 4, 5, 6 huge ground balls and sparking transition. So I love his game. I mean, there's so much to say about him. His size, I think he's a pest, you know, despite being built lower to the ground. But he plays the short stick, plays a long stick down low, long stick up top. And like I said, he's like, it's the catalyst in transition. I think Penn will use him in some way. It remains to be seen. Now, you and I have gone back and forth about how he may be used. But he just generally provides a spark. And I think that especially in year one, you know, Penn will try and take advantage of, from what I've gathered, he'll play football at Penn. He was recruited to do so. Making a switch around signing week, but he may take year one off. And I get it. it's Penn. You know, you're balancing academics with two sports. That's asking a whole lot as a kid to adjust to the college level. But BJ is a fantastic high school player, and I think that he'll be, you know, a force in some capacity in college. And then with Boyer, that kid kind of does what Notre Dame wants. Like, he's always in that athletic stance, and he's another pest. You know, he puts the ball on the ground and gets it up. And I think given Notre Dame struggles offensively, I think he'll get the ball, you know, off the carpet from the wings and push it upfield. So, you know, I'm hoping to see Jose at some point this spring playing at Deerfield after finishing up a very strong career at Yorktown. But, yeah, another great player.
Ty, you mentioned McDonough's win over Boys Latin last Friday. It was one of a handful of notable results on the high school side. Additionally, Episcopal Academy with a 10-8 upset win over Malvern. You know, this in the Philly area, big Internac result. I don't want to say what I want to say, which is that I kind of always wait for this type of loss from Malvern. I mean, it just feels like it happens around this time of year every year.
Yeah, I think beyond that, what I want to say is that in many ways, it's a down year for the Interac. And I've liked these teams. I like Haverford. I think when they want to be, they are as good as many teams in the East Coast. But I don't think they have the depth to be, you know, to be dominant consistently. Yeah, and I think with Malvern, it's mid-April. I do not want to call them a disappointment, but I expected more consistency and more goals from Malvern. I think that, you know, as is the case with a lot of the private school programs, they're going to graduate great players every year, but I felt really confident about some of their 2018s, and they've had some, you know, maybe head-scratching results, I guess. I mean, like, they lost to Calvert Hall by several, kind of got smacked by them, and you expect that. And Calvert Hall is deeper. They beat Loyola, I want to say, and they lost to Delbarton, I want to say. I think that was by one when one was ranked 14th, other 15th. But this, yeah, the loss to Episcopal Academy definitely caught me off guard and caught some Philly people off guard, because I think EA had only won a handful of games, maybe one or two.
Well, in a similar result, just to kind of open up the conversation a little bit, because I think a lot of what you just said about Philadelphia is true about Washington, D.C. as well. St. Albans, 7-4 victors over Landon.
Unreal. I mean, this...
It's a Bulldog squad that's 6-7 now. You know, they had lost seven games heading into that game against the Bears.
Yeah, it's wild. I think that I really don't know a whole lot about the St. Albans team. You know, a longtime buddy of mine, Brent Hyken, who plays in the MLL, and was an All-American at Stevenson. He was fired up. We talked a little bit after the game, and I know he works with the face-off guys. And Matt Gunty is 2019 from St. Albans going to Brown was just a force. I think he's winning somewhere, you know, 70 to 85% this year, which is, you know, pretty ridiculous. But just a huge win for a program that, you know, had its heyday when it had Jesse Hubbard and the Alford brothers years ago. But I mean, with all due respect, they've been a doormat in the IAC. So to get that win and, you know, fend off a Landon team that's been struggling but is still Landon, to still defending champs, I think it's like, wow. I mean, it's just a really, really interesting result. And I know at some point I'm going to write about the parody in D.C. I've been talking about it all year, but it's just I feel sorry for the people of the Washington Post that have to put together a poll each week in D.C. because it is just it's insane. Just the overall parity and the results that I'm looking at in D.C. Between the WCAC and the IAC, a lot of talent down there.
We'll tie that. We'll do it for this week's edition of the Inside Lacrosse Preps podcast. Make sure to tune in to InsideLacrosse.com throughout the week. Tuesday night, we will have a little bit of a rundown. You'll be circling the wagons in the world of high school lacrosse. Wednesday, we'll have another update of our high school rankings. And then you'll be out on the road, as you mentioned, this weekend.
Yeah, I'm headed to Michigan. I'm really fired up. Booked this trip a while ago when I was the head honcho of Recruiting Rundown. And will be covering this game for IL, Hill and Culver, Sunday at noon at Detroit Mercy. Going to stop by Ann Arbor on Saturday and catch the Wolverines taking on Hopkins. Should be a good game, and going to try and check out the facilities. But pump for that one, number one versus number two. We'll have some some content on that coming, and just a lot of content in general. I'm really hoping there aren't any crazy results on Tuesday heading into the rankings work we do on Wednesday mornings. But I'm sure that I just jinxed myself. It cannot be harder than last week. But pump for the week ahead. Definitely some good games heading out the next couple of days, and we'll have some content coming. But thanks for tuning in.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.